This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Awakened Media, presenting The Real Dirt on Farmer John, a film about the true story of maverick farmer John Peterson's hero's journey of life, love, death, and sweet potatoes. Opens Wednesday, February 1st at Cinema 21. Information at therealdirt.net.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, February 1st, 2006, and this is the KABU Morning News. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Coming up on this program, Peter Sorensen, who is opposing Ted Kulongoski in the May primary, has outlined a plan to help Oregon community colleges with funding. The military stop-loss policy has been used on more than 50,000 troops, and a Republican congresswoman from Florida has submitted a bill to Congress with some very harsh and extreme measures against Palestine. Weather for today calls for some sun and some rain with highs in the mid-50s.
Rainfall and the already saturated ground have resulted in diluted raw sewage in Salem overflowing into the Willamette River, the city of Salem said. A diversion structure on Union Street used to avoid damaging property from sanitary sewer backups and basement flooding was activated Monday morning, said David Prock, the city's wastewater collection services manager. Signs are posted warning people to avoid contact with the water in the Willamette River because of potentially high levels of bacteria, this from the Statesman Journal.
Democrat Pete Sorensen, who is opposing Governor Ted Kulongoski in the May primary, outlined a plan to help Oregon community colleges by eliminating the state's corporate income tax kicker. Sorensen, a Lane County Commissioner since 1997, told an audience at Lane Community College that ending income tax kickers for corporations could give the state $100 million per biennium for higher education. Oregon is the only state in the country with the kicker law. Businesses get their rebate in the form of a tax credit when corporate income tax collections in a two-year budget cycle come in at least 2% above the legislature's projections. Under Sorensen's plan, money retained by the state through elimination of the corporate kicker would be used to increase the state's community college budget to $500 million per biennium. The current biennial budget for those 17 schools is $434 million. Less than they received from the state 5 years ago.
Nearly 10,000 square feet of Portland Southeast Precinct parking lot recently was sold to a local architect who wants to build affordable housing on it. Precinct Commander Rosie Sizer said yesterday, "I think we're all a bit bemused in asking, how did this happen?" Moments earlier, Sizer had asked an administrative supervisor to spray paint lines on the two-story parking lot to show officers which 55 spaces are now off-limits. The city had a chance to buy the land but didn't make a competitive offer. For Sizer, who gave a State of Southeast Precinct address to community members this week, the only message she could give was, "It's up in the air."
The first lawsuit has been filed in connection with the theft of sensitive medical records from the vehicle of a Providence Health System supervisor. Lori Paul of Portland, in her class action lawsuit filed yesterday, alleged that Providence negligently put 365,000 people at risk. The lawsuit seeks a court order requiring Providence to arrange and pay for the credit monitoring of patients whose records were stolen and to pay for restoring potential damage to credit ratings. Attorney David Sugarman said Paul and others likely to join the case will also seek damages. Providence spokesman Gary Walker said that officials needed time to assess the claims. Privacy advocates have expressed anger at the ease with which a burglar walked away with the computer files containing Social Security numbers and other personal information on hundreds of thousands of current and former patients and employees, some of who have had no contact with Providence for years.
Scientists say the mass starvation deaths of seabirds called moors off the Olympic Peninsula may be due in part to unusual weather patterns along the west coast. Last year didn't have the winds and currents necessary to maintain the network of marine food crucial to the birds' diet, and breeding failures during the summer were preceded by tens of thousands of birds washing up dead on beaches in Washington, Oregon, and California. In Washington, the state's largest colony of the birds is on Tatoosh Island, where the normal count of chicks plummeted from 8,000 to 88 last year. The breeding failure isn't expected to harm the bird's overall population, but it has raised questions. Researchers met over the issue earlier this month in Seattle, but were unable to trace the source of the strange weather, except to consider global warming's effects in the past year.
An Oregon State University professor who sought to derail publication of a graduate student's research that raised doubts about logging after wildfires said he has not given up his fight. John Sessions, a professor of forest engineering, said he will elevate his concerns to the board of the journal Science. Science published a research by OSU graduate student Daniel Donato in its January 20th issue. Sessions says the journal's peer review process failed to catch problems with the report before publishing it. His plans come after the dean at OSU's College of Forestry publicly expressed regret for the furor that comes after this, that came after Sessions and eight others made their unsuccessful plea to Science to delay publication of the research. Sessions has said logging and replanting speeds recovery of burned forests, while Donato concluded logging slows it down. The top editor of Science said Sessions is aligned with the timber industry and suggested that Sessions' work is influenced by political views. Donato's research concluded that logging in the area burned during the 2002 Biscuit Fire slowed forest recovery in the first years after the blaze. This from the Oregonian.
Thousands of hurricane evacuees in Georgia will have to start paying their own hotel bills or leave after missing a deadline to register for additional federal funds. Evacuees in nearly 2,000 hotel rooms missed a midnight Monday deadline to register with the Federal Emergency Management Agency. They will have to start paying next Tuesday, officials said. Advocates for the poor worry that the deadline could put hurricane evacuees out on the streets. An official with the Georgia Hotel and Lodging Association said each property owner or manager will have to decide whether to offer evacuees a discount or free lodging, or whether to issue a written notice to convince evacuees to leave. The agency has approved extended payments to 1,580 Georgia applicants in hotel rooms and rejected only 25.
A chemical used in the manufacture of Teflon and other nonstick and stain-resistant products should be considered a likely carcinogen, according to an independent scientific review panel advising the Environmental Protection Agency. The recommendation, included in the panel's final draft report, is consistent with its preliminary finding, which went beyond the EPA's own determination that there was only suggestive evidence from animal studies that perfluorocarbonic acid are potential human carcinogens. Officials with DuPont, the sole North American producer of PFOA, took issue with the panel's conclusions. Besides disagreeing with the EPA on the potential carcinogenicity of PFOA, also known as C8, a majority of members on the review panel also recommended that the EPA's risk assessment include additional data on PFOA's potential to cause liver, testicular, pancreatic, and breast cancers. A majority of the panel members also recommended that the chemical's effects on the hormones and other nervous and immune systems be included in the risk assessment, and that studies should not be limited by age, gender, or species in assessing human risk.
Americans spent $42 billion more than they earned last year, turning the annual U.S. savings ratio negative for the first time since the Great Depression. The official figures will be seen as a telling verdict on his 18-year reign at the U.S. Central Bank. The savings ratio fell to minus 0.5% last year, meaning Americans not only spent all of their after-tax income, but also had to increase their borrowings or plunder their savings. This is the first time the ratio has gone negative for an entire year since 1932 and 33, when the U.S. was struggling to cope with the Great Depression. The savings ratio is seen as a key economic indicator as it shows how vulnerable households are to a sudden shock, such as a surge in interest rates or unexpected job loss.
Brian Kavanaugh, an assistant state attorney in Broward County, Florida, is prosecuting three men for the murder of former San Cruz casino ship's owner, Costantinos Gus Bulis. He wants to talk to Abramoff and a close business associate, Adam Kaden, about what role, if any, they played in the murder. Abramoff and Kaden have pled guilty to a $23 million wire fraud involving the purchase of Sun Cruise Casino. As part of their deals, they must cooperate with all law enforcement agencies. In 2000, Abramoff tricked Gus Boulay out of his Sun Cruise Casino's gambling chips. Abramoff and Kadan managed to persuade investors to go along with the arrangement by claiming they had put up $23 million of their own money for the deal, offering phony wire transfers as evidence. When Boulay wanted to be paid, he went to Kadan for the money and a fistfight broke out between the two men. Kadan came away and spreading the story that Boulay had promised to kill him. The fracas sparked a federal investigation, and within a few months, Abramoff and Kadan were charged with fraud regarding the Sun Cruise purchase. And on February 6, 2001, Boulay was driving his car in Fort Lauderdale when two cars boxed him in. A third car going in the opposite direction pulled up to his side and its driver, shot Boulay three times in the chest. Charged with the murder are now Anthony Ferrari, James Fiorelli, and former Gambiano family bookkeeper Antonio Moscatello. During a 2001 civil case, Kadan also admitted that he paid the men now charged with Boulay's murder $250,000. Kavanaugh is setting his sights on interviewing the Abramoff crew during his continuing investigation into the Boulay murder. Abramoff has not directly been implicated in the murder, but Kavanaugh is keeping his options open. The trial is scheduled to start in early February.
Samuel Alito won U.S. Senate confirmation yesterday to replace Justice Sandra Day O'Connor in a mostly partisan vote that helped President Bush move the Supreme Court to the right. The Senate voted 58-42 to elevate Alito from a Philadelphia-based appeals court to be the nation's 110th Supreme Court justice. Alito watched the vote from the White House along with Bush. He will be sworn in today in time to attend the President's State of the Union speech to Congress, along with Bush's other high court appointee, Chief Justice John Roberts. Four Democrats joined 54 Republicans in voting for Alito, whose nomination spurred a partisan debate over whether he would scale back abortion rights or check Bush's claim of wartime powers to fight terrorism. Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island was the only Republican to oppose Alito. The rancorous fight over Alito was in contrast to the more harmonious confirmation of Roberts by a vote of 78-22 in September. Roberts replaced the late Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist, a staunch conservative unlike O'Connor, who has been a pivotal vote on such issues as abortion, affirmative action, and civil rights. The number of votes against Alito was the second highest total for a confirmed justice. Clarence Thomas was approved 52-48 by the Senate in 1991.
The stop-loss policy used by the Army to keep U.S. soldiers and reservists in the military beyond the date when their service was supposed to end has been used on more than 50,000 troops since the war on Iraq began. Currently, it is being used to extend the duty of 12,500 troops, this from the Christian Science Monitor. The measure applies to units about to deploy to Afghanistan or Iraq, and under the policy, soldiers who normally would leave when their commitments expire must remain in the Army, starting 90 days before their unit is scheduled to depart, through the end of their deployment and up to another 90 days after returning to their home base. With year-long tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, some soldiers can be forced to stay in the Army an extra 18 months. A Pentagon report written for the Department of Defense by a former military officer said stop-loss was a short-term fix, enabling the Army to meet deployment requirements, but that such policies risk breaking the force as recruitment and retention problems mount. On Sunday, it was reported that Bush will use his new budget to call for a reduction in the size of the Army Reserve to its lowest level in three decades. The proposed cut, if accepted by Congress, would form part of a broader band to achieve a new balance of troop strength and combat power among the active Army, the National Guard, and Reserve to fight the global war on terrorism and to defend the homeland.
According to CNN, peace activist Cindy Sheehan was arrested yesterday in the House chamber after she unfurled an anti-war banner before President Bush's State of the Union address. According to CNN, Capitol Police arrested Sheehan and questioned her for about an hour in a separate area of the White House, a senior House official said. Sheehan was invited guest of Representative Lynn Woolsey, Democrat of California, who has called for a withdrawal of troops in Iraq and supports legislation for the creation of a Department of Peace. Sheehan has dogged the Bush administration since August, when she and hundreds of fellow protesters began demanding an audience with the president and camping outside his ranch in Crawford, Texas. Bush has refused to meet again with Sheehan and has taken issue with her calls for withdrawal of troops from Iraq.
The Bush administration will let thousands of factory-style farms escape severe penalties for polluting the air and water with animal excrement in exchange for data to help curb future pollution. The Environmental Protection Agency has signed agreements with over 2,600 animal feeding operations in the egg, chicken, turkey, dairy, and hog industries. They would be exempt from having to pay potential fines of up to $27,500 a day for violations, either in the past or over the next 4 years. On Monday, the EPA said its Environmental Appeals Board had approved the first 20 of those agreements. EPA officials said those approvals set the stage for the remaining agreements to gain approval quickly. Pollutants to be monitored include soot and volatile organic compounds, as required by the Clean Air Act, and ammonia and hydrogen sulfide, as required by Superfund's emergency reporting provision. Environmental Quality Director for the Sierra Club, Ed Hopkins, says that the decision is a great disservice for people who live around large factory farms, adding that it basically gives these farms a free ride on the backs of the public because there's really nothing in the deal that holds the polluters accountable for the toxic air emissions they release.
Republican Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Lehtinen from Florida has submitted the first legislative response to Hamas's landslide victory in Palestinian elections last week. The bill, co-sponsored by Democratic Congressman Tom Lantos from California, includes a number of extremely harsh measures against the radical Islamic movement. This from Haaretz. Republican Congressman Vito Fasella from New York also introduced legislation yesterday banning support for the Palestinian Authority. She said that not $1 of taxpayer money should go to this terrorist organization. The legislation introduced by Ross-Lehtinen and Lantos is broad in reach and scope and includes measures aimed at strengthening travel restrictions to the U.S. on members or associates of Hamas, integrated into the Palestinian Authority, the Palestinian Legislative Council, municipalities, and other constituent elements. The legislation wants the U.S. to withhold contributions to the U.N. proportional to the amounts the U.N. provides to such entities or to U.N. programs with the PA, call for the Palestinian territories to be designated a terrorist sanctuary, and eliminating the PLO offices in Washington. The bill also seeks to prohibit direct assistance to the PA, the PLC, municipalities, and other constituent elements that are governed by individuals associated with Hamas or other terrorist entities. Audit all committees, offices, and commissions focused on the Palestinian agenda at the United Nations and recommend for their elimination.
Israel has frozen this month's transfer of $45 million in tax rebates and customs payments to the Palestinian Authority, while it reviews its options following the Hamas victory in last week's parliamentary election, an Israeli government official said today. The Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman said the transfers will be on hold while the issue is being reviewed, and that the expectation is that the automatic transfers will not continue. Palestinian officials said Israel's payment for January is already several days overdue and that they may not be able to pay the salaries of 137,000 government workers if Israel does not send the money. Unemployment in the Palestinian area runs high, and many Palestinian families depend on a government salary. A failure to pay the January salaries could pose the most difficult test yet for Hamas. The United States and the European Union have said millions of dollars in aid, the lifeline of the Palestinian economy, could be in jeopardy unless Hamas changes its policies towards Israel. Osama Hamdan, a senior member of Hamas exiled leadership, said this group is already looking for new sources of funding, especially from the Muslim world.
Senior Hamas officials have said they won't be blackmailed by Western threats to halt aid to the Palestinians. This from Al Jazeera. Talks in London on Monday by the United States, United Nations, European Union, and Russia warned that international aid to the Palestinians could be cut if Hamas refused to recognize Israel. It added that future funding would be reviewed in reference to these demands, but did not threaten to cut it in the short term. Hamas rejected the ultimatum and said that they should instead call on Israel to change its policies. repeating demands for an end to the occupation of Palestinian territories and aggression against the Palestinians. Hamas's overall leader, Damascus-based Khaled Mishael, also said that attempts by the West to force change on the group were doomed to failure. Meanwhile, Hamas's political leader in Gaza said that unfair conditions would endanger the well-being of Palestinians, and he insisted that foreign aid was vital humanitarian assistance for people living under occupation. Cracks were already showing in groups' united stance, with Russian President Vladimir Putin saying the international community must continue to provide aid to the Palestinians despite Hamas's victory in the parliamentary elections.
A report shows that corruption in healthcare systems remains a global problem in both poor and rich countries, and more must be done to stamp it out. This from the BBC. Transparency International, an anti-corruption body, looked at the more than $3 trillion the world spends on healthcare services each year. It said that at least 5% of funds could be being lost, and that they have called for the strengthened codes of conduct and more transparency. Its Global Corruption 2006 report found that the health sector remains an attractive target for abuse due to the large amounts of money involved and the complexities of many healthcare systems. At best, corruption can mean hospitals or patients having to overpay for services, and at worst, it can mean people dying because of counterfeit drugs. Transparency International also found that the poor were worse affected by corruption because they were less able to afford to pay the small bribes that can sometimes be demanded in some countries. Transparency International also called for health authorities to allow more oversight from members of the public, and that the corruption could further be better tackled through greater protection for whistleblowers, decent wages for medical staff, stricter conflict of interest rules, and more rigorous prosecution.
The governments of the United States and Iran, part of President George W. Bush's axis of evil and his current nuclear bête noir, demonstrated rare unity of cause this past week. Washington backed a Tehran initiative to deny UN access to advocates of sexual minorities' rights. This from oneworld.net. Rights advocates said the Bush administration's international posture matched its increasingly strident and discriminatory bent at home. Religiously and socially extremist elements of the U.S. population and among Bush's supporters, to whom many pundits attributed the president's 2004 re-election, have been increasingly loud and militant over the past year, according to human rights activists. The federal government's U.N. vote to dismiss two international organizations' applications for speaking rights at the Economic and Social Council, ECOSOC, brought the U.S. government in line with the regimes it routinely chides as human rights delinquents, HRW said. These include the leaders of Cameroon, China, Cuba, Pakistan, Russia, Senegal, Sudan, and Zimbabwe. The move also marked a shift in policy for Washington. Previously, Washington had supported or abstained on such applications, according to HRW. Officials gave no explanation for the change.
According to Al Jazeera, Iraqi police have found the bodies of 11 young men, all blindfolded and shot in the head, in the back of a deserted truck in western Baghdad. Police said the bodies of the men, all apparently civilians, were found in Baghdad's violent Qasidiyya district on Tuesday. They had marks on their wrists indicating they had been restrained. Three other bodies were found dumped near a road in the southeast skirts of the capital. They also had gunshot wounds to the head. Police said their identities were not known. Since the U.S.-led invasion that ousted Saddam Hussein in March of 2003, hundreds of bodies have been found dumped in fields, at roadsides, and in rivers, often bound and shot in the head. Iraqi Sunni Arabs, who dominate the revolt against the U.S.-led forces in Iraq and the U.S.-backed Shia-led government, accuse the Iraqi security forces of kidnapping their sect members and brutally torturing them before executing them. The Shia-led security forces deny the charges. In other developments, four Iraqi soldiers were killed and another wounded after they clashed with armed Iraqi fighters in Tarmia, a small town 30 kilometers north of Baghdad.
According to Reuters, the U.S. military fired shots at the Canadian ambassador's car in Baghdad yesterday, but there were no injuries. Canada's CBC News reported the car was believed to be carrying some members of the Canadian Diplomatic Service through Baghdad's heavily fortified Green Zone when it came under fire. A spokesman for Canada's Department of Foreign Affairs said the U.S. troops apparently asked the car to stop, CBC said in a report on its website. but when the driver didn't respond, they fired into the vehicle's engine block. One round apparently pierced the passenger side of the car. Excuse me. One round apparently pierced the passenger side of the car, the report said, adding that Canadian and U.S. authorities were investigating. The Pentagon had no immediate comment on the report.
According to the BBC, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has accused U.S. Embassy staff of espionage and says Venezuelan agents have infiltrated the alleged spy ring. The claims follow accusations that some Venezuelan naval officers have passed information through the U.S. Embassy. Chavez has repeatedly accused the U.S. of sporting attempts to overthrow him, an allegation Washington denies. In his latest comments at the launch of a new company to coordinate the government's growing industrial activities, he urged U.S. Ambassador William Brownfield to stop spying. Chavez threatened last week to have any American officials involved in spying arrested. U.S. Embassy officials say they have not been contacted on the latest accusations or told the details of any charges. The U.S. State Department has called the charges a domestic matter for Venezuela.
A majority of Nigeria's 36 state governors have given their backing to moves to change the constitution. The most controversial part of the proposed changes is the scrapping of the two-term limit for elected officials, notably the president. The issue has divided the ruling People's Democratic Party and Nigerian public opinion, with President Olusegun Obasanjo's second term ending in 2007. Nigeria's powerful governors are also limited to two terms in office, and so could benefit if the constitution were changed. The chairman of the Governors Forum said it. The chairman of the Governors Forum said in a constitutional review was necessary and should be completed within the life of this administration. The meeting also urged an end to the practice of regional meetings between leaders from either the south or the north of Nigeria. They said such meetings could serve to divide Nigeria between the Muslim-majority north and the Christian and animist south.
A Chilean judge has questioned detained former Peruvian President Alberto Fujimori about corruptions and rights abuse charges facing him in Peru. This from the BBC. Fujimori was questioned for 4 hours in Santiago by Judge Ovaros Alvarez, who will decide whether to recommend his extradition to Peru. Fujimori fled to Japan in 2000, but came to Chile last November planning to challenge for Peru's presidency. However, Peru has now banned him from running until 2011. Court spokesman said the judge's visit to the detention center would be the first of various interrogations. The judge must examine 12 boxes of evidence before ruling on Peru's extradition request. Fujimori fled to Japan in 2000 after his government was mired in a corruption scandal, but denies any wrongdoing and says the charges against him are politically motivated.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has defended tighter controls on NGOs in Russia, according to the BBC. Putin said he will not allow foreign puppeteers to control them. He was commenting on the recent spying row in which Moscow accused British diplomats of making secret payments to non-governmental organizations. Putin has signed a law giving the authorities wide-ranging powers to monitor the activities and finances of NGOs. The new powers, which include the right to suspend NGOs should they, quote, threaten Russia's sovereignty or independence, unquote, have been condemned by both domestic and international rights groups. The rules are widely seen as a Russian effort to prevent any Ukraine or Georgia-style revolution spearheaded by NGOs. The FSB Security Service, the main successor to the Soviet KGB, has accused Western intelligence agents of using NGOs to foment revolution in the former Soviet Union.
And a British man has been arrested by police investigating how dog poo came to be listed on the ingredients of a packet of sliced ham. This from the BBC. Detectives were called after reports that the words were found on the label of a packet of the cooked meat bought in Wakefield, West Yorkshire. Meat manufacturer H.R. Hargraves & Son is recalling the products. A 21-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of tampering with the label. The man was released on bail by police as detectives continue to investigate.
That's the KBOO Morning News for Wednesday, February 1st, 2006. The weather for today calls for rain with some sun mixed in and temperatures in the mid-50s. You're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. You can log on to our website at kbu.fm. Our producer for this morning's newscast is Brian Smith. Assistant producer is Chris Andre. Engineering is Greg. The KBOO Morning News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Brian Smith.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 7:30, Per Foggering hosts Locus Focus Talk Radio. At 9 on the bike show, the topic is what's with the TriMet squeeze? Do TriMet bus drivers have it out for cyclists, or are they just trying to do their best to drive a very large vehicle? The guest is Kieran Lamaye, bicycle coordinator for TriMet and a bus operator. At 10 on People Rise Up, Andrew Geller continues, "It is happening here," his year-long investigation of fascism in the United States government and society. This part will focus on powerful and continuing expressions of nationalism. It features author and lecturer Michael Parenti as guest. And at 11, Democracy Now! Tune in tonight at 5 for the KBOO Evening News, followed at 6 by Circle A Radio. Circle A will talk with Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes Jr. of the Albina Ministerial Alliance and Candace Larson of Rose City Cop Watch about police violence and accountability. That's all right here on KBOO, your community, non-corporate, volunteer-powered, and listener-owned radio station. And be sure to catch the evening news at 5 p.m. Thanks for joining us.
This is the community calendar for Wednesday, February 1st. In recognition of Black History Month, the Geography and Criminal Justice Departments at Mount Hood Community College proudly announce a series of film screenings related to the history of African Americans in our country. The film Amistad will kick off the series tonight at 7 o'clock p.m. in room AC2607 at the Gresham campus, and that address is 26000 Southeast Stark Street in Gresham. These films are free and open to the public. For more information, contact Chris Gorsuch at 503-491-7321. Once again, it's mailing night tonight for the Portland Books to Prisoners. These mailouts are from 5 to 8 p.m. and held at 2362 Southeast 43rd Avenue. Portland Books to Prisoners is an all-volunteer project dedicated to assisting in the education and literacy of people who are incarcerated. They receive and respond to all letters from people in prison by sending books in the subject areas requested. For more information about this program, email pdxbookstoprisoners@riseup.net. Working Class is a study group that challenges class and gender stereotypes in order to arrive at an inclusive definition of that working class and then collaboratively develop an understanding of working class social conditions and cultural expression. The group session will be held on Thursday, starting tomorrow, February 2nd, from 6 to 7 p.m. at the IWW Hall at 616 East Burnside in Portland. Donation only. No one will be turned away for lack of funds. For more information, contact Paul at 503-309-6744. Learn firsthand about another culture without leaving the U.S. and establish a friendship that will last a lifetime. PIE has international students from more than 40 countries arriving into our area for homestay programs. They need your help. The nonprofit organization is looking for a few more caring host families to share the American way of life. If you think you may be interested in hosting a foreign teen or would like more information about the program, please call PIE at 800-828-9001. You've been listening to the community calendar for Wednesday, February 1st. This is Alicia Olson for KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio in Portland, Hood River, and Corvallis.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Awakened Media, presenting The Real Dirt on Farmer John, a film about the true story of maverick farmer John Peterson's hero's journey of life, love, death, and sweet potatoes. Opens Wednesday, February 1st at Cinema 21. Information at therealdirt.net.